Here is the managing general and senior vice president of baseball for the Toronto Blue Jays, Alex Anthopoulos. So I'll ask you the same question I just asked Brunt. Do you believe you're playing meaningful baseball games this month?
Yes, but I also am a realist and understand that we need to have a great month. We need to have a month like we did in May. And, you know, clearly as I say that, I'm going to talk about things like the Indians going 21-6 last September to get in. And, you know, when that's, and we need to have one of those type of months that we have a 21 month or whatnot and get really hot. And I think we're capable of doing that. And I understand it's not easy. And certainly it's going to be challenging. But that was a lot of the decision making with some of the call-ups. We wanted to bring everybody up that we felt could help us win games because crazier things have happened. We've seen Tampa do it a few years back. And we certainly are capable of. Our offense is back to what it was in May when we think Encarnacion's about to break out and Wynn being back and so on. And we think we have the ability to get hot, so we're going to give ourselves every chance.
What happened in August, Alex?
Great question. I think combination of all of it, offense, defense, rotation, the bullpen's been very inconsistent really the entire year. But, you know, we lost some close games. We did not have a very good month, and it really hurt us. I mean, we were right there at the beginning of the month. I think we were 10 games over, right around that number, and we think we were 9 under or 8 under for the month, and that certainly certainly put ourselves in a hole, and it's going to make it that much more challenging for us in September. But I don't think anybody here is conceding anything, and the mindset certainly is that from everybody that we're going to try to go on a run here and try to get to that playoff spot.
In your own words, in your opinion, did you come close to consummating a deal of any significance beyond what we know you did, which I think you would acknowledge were not really, in the fans' eyes at least, significant deals? Did you come close at any time either during July or August?
No, and I completely understand and agree with it. There were no big blockbusters, even, you know, the small things that we did. You know, we didn't go out and get a rotation piece or a guy that was an everyday player for us, at least someone that we counted on being an everyday player for us. And Frank, I think I said this at the time, we didn't ever get close to anything significant. We certainly inquired and asked, but we didn't get close just because of the asking prices at the time. And it's not to be critical of the asking prices. When you're asking for great players on the other side, they're going to ask for what you deem as very good players as well. But ultimately, we would have blown a hole in other parts of our team. And even if you look back at the trade deadline, it was a unique one from years past because it was the first time you saw clubs trading big league talent for big league talent. And in past years, you'd see, for the most part, prospects traded for established players. And you know, I could say this now because I think even the Red Sox have come out and acknowledged it, but all the deals that they made, they were very explicit, and even when I spoke to them, that they were not interested in going the prospect route, really. They were going to try to get established big league players back, and they're going to, you know, obviously retool and get back at it and be that contending team that they consistently are year in and year out. So, and a few other clubs did the same thing. You saw them trade for established big league players. So ultimately, peeling some of our established guys and elite level talent that we think we have on the 25 men to add others may have created a bit of a splash, but ultimately we felt that we would have got worse as a club.
I know you're not, you know, that we're not into 2015 mode here yet, but you know, a lot of people look at the roster right now, Alex, and they say, boy, you've got the potential for, you know, a very exciting young pitching rotation, young controllable guys all in their early 20s. All coming of age, it would appear, at the same time. And at the other hand, you have some core guys among your position players who are at a very different stage in their career, that there's a bit of a, you know, a disconnect now between, you know, the generations here. Is there a way to bridge that, or do you have to make a decision about which way this team's going to go in 2015?
Yeah, that's a great, great question, and it's fair. And actually, normally, I think if you were going completely young, you'd have to really make some decisions there, but we think some of the young guys that have come up and are starting to establish themselves, they're performing at a high level. So it's that much more exciting, like you said, the fact that they are young, that they're under control for a long time, that they add payroll flexibility going forward. But, you know, the fact that Stroman's got less than a year of service at this point, and, you know, we control him for six more years beyond this year and so on, it doesn't really, he fits in great with Jose Bautista and Edwin Encarnacion and Burley and Dickey because he's performing at a high level right now. And even a guy like Aaron Sanchez, we haven't had a chance to see him in the rotation, but we think he can hit the ground running. So in a perfect world, you actually have a roster that's composed of both, and you get to mix it a little bit and you get to integrate some guys. Now, if you told me, you know, banking on guys like Dalton Pompeo that are just making their way through the minor leagues and have had a quick season, and if you have a lot of guys like that that you're trying to integrate, it would be totally different. But we think some of the young players we have are ready to contribute and be above-average players right now. And if anything, we're just going to look to continue to add to that. And even beyond that, with some of our core players, whether it is, you know, everyone always points to and asks about Bautista and Encarnacion. You know, you look at a guy like Bautista, he's 33 years old right now, but he's someone that if you look at his body type and his work ethic and the way he takes care of himself, I expect him to be a productive player until his late 30s or even 40. I certainly know he's going to have the desire to do that. And you look at whether it's the Raul Ibanez's or the Edgar Martinez's or even a guy like Carlos Beltran or a guy like Ortiz, those guys into their mid to late 30s are highly productive. And Encarnacion, I believe, is 31. And because they have 2 years left on their contract, a year and an option, that certainly does not eliminate the possibility that we don't sit down with those guys at some point and we start adding on some years. So it's not strictly a two-year window with those guys. They have 2 years currently, but we think they're going to be productive for a long time, and they absolutely can be part of another wave here and another core for 4 or 5 years beyond that.
So we've sort of established with Alex Anthopoulos, we sort of established the pitching staff, and we haven't defined where it's going to land, and I don't think you absolutely know how many of these young guys are going to wind up in the rotation next year, because you could have all five of them. I mean, nobody thinks that's going to happen, but Stroman, Sanchez, Hutchison, Norris, and Nolan, theoretically, you could go down that route. We've seen other organizations do that kind of thing. We don't expect that, but we understand that. We understand the bullpen tends to be a rotating thing. They get hot, they get cold, guys move in, guys move out. Right. Among the eight everyday players, what is your number one priority in terms of acquisition in the offseason?
Great question. I mean, we've got obviously two-thirds of our outfield are slated to be free agents. Mm-hmm. And, you know, we certainly have some outfield depth with some of the young guys, but, you know, I certainly can't sit here and say that I know for certain whether any of our younger outfielders are prepared to be everyday players or to have success. And I know we talked about the Red Sox earlier. They have a bunch of really talented young players, but you just don't know when you're turning it over to too many young players how they're going to react to a full season. So I'd say the outfield, one way or the other, two or three spots is significant, and we're going to need to address that as well. And I think internally, because we have outfield depth and we think it's we're a little bit and maybe in a better position to take our time on it, and that's not to say we're not interested in bringing those guys back. But I'd say more we'd love to try to get an established second or third baseman. It's been a revolving door now for a few years, and just have someone that could be a mainstay. Obviously, Brett's going to be playing one of those two spots, but to have somebody else, and I know we've had Kawasaki and Goins, and we've, you know, mixed and matched with Tolleson and Valencia and so on, and Francisco, and to have someone that's more of an established guy there, that would be ideal. But to answer the question, probably two-thirds of the outfield is significant one way or the other. That would probably be the priority off top of my head, and that might change again a month from now, depending on how guys play.
Do you have any level of confidence that you can re-sign Cabrera? And part B is there any reason that you can think of why you wouldn't want to pursue him actively?
No, we love him. He's been great. He's had a great year, and you know, I think he enjoys being here, and I think he wants to be back here, and you know. Beyond that, I probably wouldn't say a whole lot more, but I think everybody we have here that's a free agent is very willing to come back. Obviously, it has to make sense for them, and especially as they get close to free agency, they have options. And it's more challenging when you get to this point because there's a lot of incentive for those players to test the market being as close as they are. And that's not to say that's going to rule us out. But I think all these guys, I think every free agent we have, there's a level of interest we would have to bring them back. Whether we can agree on years and dollars is a separate factor. And with some players, we've got the qualifying offer component that we can certainly place on them. And, you know, we'll make that decision when the time comes. But, I'd say every free agent at the right price, they all have a value to us. They're all guys we'd like to have back.
What are you going to do in terms of Brandon Morrow in September, Alex? You've got a guy, you have a club option that you can exercise for, what, $10 million. He obviously has had a bit of a star-crossed career. Everybody understands the arm and everybody understands the talent and everybody understands he hasn't pitched enough, you know, for anybody to be comfortable right now about going forward. But how do you approach September? He's going to pitch out of the bullpen. What are you looking for? What are you thinking?
Like you said, he only had three innings on rehab. And the velocity was there. Every game report I got back was 94 to 98. And I got to watch some of it just on the internet, some of the games. And you know, you wish he'd had a few more innings on rehab just to get his secondary stuff going. And, you know, the velocity was great. He got a lot of angle and downhill play and an explosive fastball. I never seem to see a plus slider that we know is in there. But that can come tonight if he gets a chance to pitch and getting back at the big league level. And that just would have been reps to get that slider back. But I have every confidence in the world with how he looks right now that Brandon would not surprise me that he looks like an elite-level reliever when he comes out there. We all know the stuff, like you said, and for one inning when he can blow it out, not have to worry to pace himself, I think he's going to look outstanding as long as that slider comes back, which I'm optimistic it will when he gets more reps. But in terms of his option and things like that, we've had times before, I got asked this before I came on the radio here, about options and what if the prices don't work. And so we did it with Edwin Encarnacion years ago when we wanted to bring him back. He was eligible for arbitration, was probably scheduled to earn about $7 million, and we weren't prepared to pay that. But we had interest in bringing him back. He had interest in coming back here. So we worked something out that he could test the market, see what was out there, and we agreed that we would talk again once he felt his value was clearly defined. And this isn't specific to Brandon, but with anybody that has an option, you always have that ability. As long as there's dialogue and communication and desire on both sides, you're not married to that option. I mean, it gives you some type of starting point, but if you can't come to terms, you still can always you can decline that option and renegotiate some other deal.
When will you know how much money you have to spend next year?
So normally we'll have this, obviously once the season's over, we start to have discussions, and more specifically, I'll have discussions with Paul. And like I've always said, I'm given an area where we'd like to be, and depending on if other opportunities present themselves, we can adjust. But there isn't really a date. It's at some point, once the season's over, we start to get together and have some meetings, and we start to formalize and get some direction as to where we'd like the payroll area to be. And then we move forward with our off season, and that can adjust here and there as we move along.
What's that number based on, Alex? You know, I know you have about 90-odd million dollars in commitments going forward from this year. What beyond that, what's the number based on?
Yeah, and I would say Paul's probably more the one to ask on that. I mean, I would assume, and I don't, again, I'm talking a little bit out of turn here because I'm not involved in the decision-making with respect to how they get to the number. I mean, Paul will ask me specifically who are some free agents we might like to go after, who might we be looking at in trade, are we looking to do anything with our internal players' extensions? But I know it's strictly, you know, that he's the one that looks at what we're generating from TV dollars, what we're going to generate from an attendance standpoint. There's clearly a revenue generating component to that number and what the projections are. What completely goes into it, I don't know. I don't get involved in our TV deals. I don't get involved in our sales, attendance, suites, corporate partnerships, all those type of things. I'm not in those meetings. I'm not involved in that side of things. But I would think those are all things that, for lack of a better analogy, get put into a stew, and then they come up with a number at that point.
To skip back to Morrow for just a second, if you were a betting man, if Morrow is back next year, under whatever circumstances, is he a starter or a reliever? What's your best guess?
Good question. That would be the question: is what role would be the best for us? Who else do we have here? And I know I'm not answering the question the way you want me to, but does he thrive out of the bullpen? And do we say, look, we've got options. We're a stronger club with him out of the bullpen and some other starters. I think it can go both ways. But, you know, the biggest thing is more for him. You know, what does he want to do? He's still
young. Well, that's the question. Yeah. See, because he was in the bullpen in Seattle. We were led to believe when he came here that he was going to get the opportunity to start, and he did. And that's really what he wanted to do.
Correct.
And be. And I'm thinking, if you have in your vision Brandon Morrow as penciled in as a reliever, how does that impact on your ability to get him to come back?
I think he'd be open to it because even when he was on rehab, we kind of floated to him the opportunity to do both or to start. And I talked to him earlier before he started that if he wanted to try to get stretched out a little bit, we didn't think we were going to have enough time to get him to five or six innings. But I did mention him if he felt like he wanted to try to take a little bit of time to try to maybe get to three or four innings, and we would be willing to work with him on that just to see how he felt and how it looked. And he felt strongly that, you know, giving the bullpen a shot, considering how we weren't going to have that much time to get him stretched out, he was really embraced, you know, giving the bullpen a shot and being a one-inning guy and trying to see how he did. So based on that and that only, I've never had that specific conversation about him going forward.
Could, yeah,
I think he'd be very, very open to it.
If you lose Jansen.
Yeah, could he close?
Yeah, he's the obvious guy to close, theoretically.
Yeah, I mean, he's done it before, so he's certainly capable of doing that. But, you know, like anything, I mean, closures can come from anywhere. So a guy like Jansen, I mean, I think a lot of guys are capable. A guy like Jansen's done it at an elite level, a high level for us for a long time. He's been outstanding. He's someone we'd like to have here long term. Again, there's with free agency, there's no guarantees that you know, you get to keep any of these guys. But I do think that sometimes guys just need to get the opportunity. But you know, that's where the guys that have done it get paid, because there's that comfort level knowing that they can do it rather than the unknown.